Welcome to the Mini Me Mental and Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Bartram-Brown, the founder of Mini Me Yoga and a doctor of natural medicine. I have an amazing team of experts. We will be sharing top tips that will help us navigate the current challenges that we as teachers, parents, grandparents, child caregivers are faced with, giving you self-help techniques that are super fun. We look forward to sharing more of the Mini Me magic with you. And we are live. Yes. I mean, that's like my favorite thing now, because it's like we have a chat beforehand, don't we, in the studio? And then it's like, oh, okay, so now we need to know when we're going live. So it's like, now we're live.
It's a bit like Davina McCall when she first started on Big Brother, do you think?
Yeah.
The house. That's what I would be thinking.
Yeah, it is. We are live. Yeah. It's all very dramatic, and of course it should be dramatic, because we're speaking to you today, Rachel, the fabulous Rachel. And I loved your bio and you know, a description of all the amazing things that you've done, and these interviews that I'm doing over the next few weeks, months, let's see how it goes, are really just to help and support parents and teachers on this phase back into school, into homework balance, all these different things that are going on. And as you know, at Mini Me Yoga, we have an app, you know, we have a network of over 60 experts for early learning to teens and vulnerable children, all sorts. So I thought it'd be a great opportunity for us to, you know, share some of these insights with our audience. So I wonder whether you could do a little intro about yourself and your background.
Okay, well, I'll try and keep it succinct, because I've done some varied things. It's all been great fun and all led me onto this path that I'm on now, which is brilliant. I started about 20, maybe a little bit over 20 years ago, working for social services, and eventually went on to do another youth work degree, because I just loved working with teenagers. So when I worked for a duty team, which for those who do not know is the first point of contact, so when you get a referral for children's services, the first team that it goes into is duty. We either assess needs or do a child protection investigation, and I was always handed all the teenagers, so it just became a thing that I would would be what I would do. And then I eventually went and did a youth work degree, because it was just my love. I just absolutely adored working with that older age group, and felt they were massively misrepresented in terms of how people perceived them, and also in like their actions. Everyone just sort of thought that they were doing the right thing all the time, and actually what I discovered from them is they had a great sense of fairness and parity and values, and they just spoke a different language. So I used to call myself the translator, because I used to take what they would say and then just give it to professionals and to parents in a different way. And I really, really enjoyed that, because parents be like, oh, that's what they're trying to say. And then, yes, yeah, so lots and lots of work managing projects in the community. I've had a love of working with the most hard to reach, I think it would be fair to say. So I've done lots of detached youth work and street based youth work. And if you've never done it, you'll never really appreciate the pureness of the youth work that is. Because you are walking the streets and you're in their territory, and if they don't want to talk to you, they can use some smaller words to tell you to go away. But actually, it never happened. They were always really receptive, and we're building up connections, and a joint understanding really made a difference in all the bits that we did. And then I had a baby, and it just changed my world. It's so funny. So I had always thought that I didn't particularly like working with younger children. And then I had this tiny little thing to work with myself. And I, as you do, if you're particularly interested, started reading far, far more upon the neuroscience of parenting. You know, a little bit of like reading in between breastfeeding every hour. And And I realised that so many of the things that I'd assumed that societally we were further along with for littler children, we actually weren't, and that they had the same issues of people not understanding them and not realising what their actions were really meaning and it being a form of a language. And that just took me on a whole new journey into that, which then when I went back from maternity leave meant that I wanted to show professionals what I knew. So rather than all the delivery and training to teenagers and to professionals working with teenagers, I started expanding it to be everything to do with all ages of children. So yeah, it's been a really interesting journey actually. Like, I've loved it, and it's all formed part of the same thing. And now I just predominantly deliver training and offer consultancy, and it's great.
I love that. I love your background. And it's so fascinating because you talk about this language. And this is what I've always felt as well for children, is that they are so in tune. They are so aware. They know what they want. They know what they're feeling and sensing. Yet it's the trying to. Yeah. It is. So would you then, there's a couple of things that I want to touch on with all the things that, you know, your background. First of all, would you say that if children are understood at a younger age, you know, maybe they're better understood, let's say, at a younger age, do you think we would have the same issues going into teenage years?
So I am on an absolute mission with this at the minute. So I deliver lots of training around emotion coaching, and it's not well known over here. There's not many of us who deliver anything close to emotion coaching. It's come from the Gottman Institute. It originally was for married couples, for them to work together, to work away of, you know, having a balanced and open relationship that was full of communication, all the things we want for our children, their parents' relationships, and also between them as friends. And then he discovered that actually it worked, whatever the relationship was. And the outcomes for children are phenomenal. The bit that gets me the most, and I tell all my parents that I work with this, is that they only have to be exposed to it for 30% of the time for it to have a major impact. How amazing is that? Like, genuinely, I know that I'm like enthused about lots of things all the time, and I'm like this little bouncing bunny, but the idea that you could have such a marked and positive impact on a child by remembering to do a thing that actually, with practice, gets quite easy. Just 30% of the time, that takes the pressure off parents. It means that they don't have to feel that they're on all the time, because I can assure you that today, trying to navigate parenting and working from home and all of that, I have an emotion coach all day, you know. I have an emotion coach myself, never mind my son. And it's fantastic that you know that you can drop some balls as a parent and still pick them back up again and still have such a marked impact. And emotion coaching is all around naming the emotions, giving the vocabulary for it, recognising that those emotions are real and not minimising them or dismissing them. And actually, quite crucially, helping them get through to a solution, which is exactly what we want our adults to be, isn't it? And we are raising adults, we're not raising children. We don't want lots of 40-year-olds walking around with the mind of a 5-year-old. We want lots of 40-year-olds walking around as a 40-year-old. And I just think it's absolutely fantastic that there's this tool out there that is actually free, in essence. You know, I mean, you may pay to do some training or you may read a book, but it doesn't cost you any money to talk to your child. And I just think it's fantastic. And you can do it with your friends. You can do, you'll watch the children who are, like, have lots of emotion coach type conversations with their parents do it to their friends. And it's fantastic to see the ripples. And I'm all about that. I think anything that you can do that can have an impact positively going forward is a brilliant thing to do.
Yeah, I totally agree as well. And I think, you know, it can be very overwhelming out there, and there can be so many things that we have to do, or we think that we have to do, or we're this and we're that. But actually, it all starts with us. So if we just take responsibility for us and our own family, then it will ripple effect. It will go out to other people. It will support them. And so, you know, often, you know, we've got this big grand picture of whatever, you know, how we're going to save the world and help the world. And actually, it's just looking at us, just looking at what we can do.
I completely agree with that. And I think even moving it back a step, it's about starting with us, not as a family, but us as an individual. So I do this exercise with professionals in a room. I deliver lots of training to foster carers and I love it. And I say, right, now, you know, you're halfway through your training day. What are all the emotions you've experienced today? And they'll write this big, long list. I say, right, how many have you said out loud? And they might say angry, they might say frustrated, or, you know, happy, or so, depending on the context of the training, and whether it's mandatory or voluntary. But, and, you know, that's totally fine. And then they'll realise that there's this big disparity between the two lists. And you think, well, if you're not able to say it about your own emotions, children learn through modelling. So my child speaks English, and the reason that he's learnt English is because that's the language that I speak. So he's learnt all his vocabulary from me, and he needs the emotional vocabulary first. So I need to say it about myself. So it is quite funny, because I do get emotion coached, particularly in the car or if we're running late or somewhere. And he's like, "Mummy, are you feeling frustrated?" Yes, I am. Yes.
What would be a word for it? It's funny, isn't it? And kids are such great teachers. So like you were saying, once they've heard something or once they've grasped something, they don't need to do it, like you were saying, 100% of the time. They only need to do it a small amount of time. They've got it. They can integrate it. And then they're like, okay, so this is what we do. This is how we do it. And then it's like teaching us. And we remember it. It's like, oh, okay. This is what, you know, this is how we need to, you know, handle this.
100%. And particularly, Freddie's an only child, but if you have siblings, you'll see them do it to each other. And that, what a wonderful gift to give a child, the ability to negotiate all those trials and tribulations that will happen over and over and over. I mean, we have it in the workplace. If you work in an office, you'll have it there. It's a great tool to understand your own emotions and then be able to make it better for other people to understand theirs.
So we've been talking about this a little bit, actually, in terms of, you know, being overwhelmed as a parent or a teacher. And often there's so much information out there, and there's so much that we can do and we feel like we should be doing. You know, we all go through that. And then we realize, okay, we're not going to do anything because we feel so overwhelmed. And interestingly, we've been talking about this again and again, and it's children do what we do. They don't do what we say. So would you say that, you know, in these coming weeks and months, or, you know, of transition, going back into school, back into the workplace and all the rest of it, if we are modeling the positive behavior or in the way, whatever system we want to use, how is that going to work? You know, how is that going to affect our children?
I think it'll have a marked impact on them, actually. It's okay for children to see adults struggling. I have it a lot in lots of my parent consultations where they almost fear backing down or changing their mind. And I always say to them, if you ever had a situation where your child needs to back down, they need to have seen it happen in front of them. So for them to see things that perhaps we don't feel are professional in certain contexts, or we're not in charge in others, you know, being in the home. I do think that it should be more fluid in the home than necessarily hierarchical. But if they see us do those things, they will start to do it themselves. And they will also know it's 100% okay to feel overwhelmed. It's 100% normal to feel worried. And that's a good thing, because those emotions are 100% okay. we all feel them. We have a massive range of emotions, and it goes hand in hand with the vocabulary. You know, seeing somebody manage a situation gives them more tools, because you don't always have to have experienced something to learn from another person how to handle it, you know. And we, they would do it in the classroom naturally. If somebody got the answer wrong, put their hand up, you know, they'll know that that's not the right answer. So watching a teacher feeling overwhelmed and then saying to the class, you know, I'm feeling really overwhelmed or I'm feeling scared, let's all do some deep breathing together. It's such a simple task, and it doesn't show weakness, it shows strength, I think.
I love that. I love that idea. And, you know, for me, I've always, you know, obviously with Mini Me Yoga in particular, I've always wanted the parents and the teachers to get on board with what the children are learning, and then being able to do it themselves, so that, you know, we have this energy flow of, you know, modeling and let's follow, and okay, this is how I navigate these situations. So I love that idea, you know, of teachers being able to do that. So obviously things have been strange in the world of education and the world full stop. And you have, you know, that area of expertise of working with vulnerable children and children that, teenagers and such like. We are now going back into a really a different type of education system. You know, maybe we're doing social distancing, maybe some of our friends won't be there because maybe their parents are at risk. And, you know, there's all these different things going on. What can parents and teachers be looking out for? What are some telltale signs that maybe a child is struggling, that they're not coping? What can we do to intervene?
See, now I think this is such a how long is a piece of string answer. I always say to parents, look for anything that is too. So if the child is naturally really loud and outgoing, and then they're quiet, then it's too quiet for them. If they're overcompensating, they're actually being very loud, and they're not normally very loud, so they're being too loud, and notice that too. So yeah, it's like too. So anything that's too much of anything that to the norm, notice it and just track it and just be aware. We all display anxiety and worry in lots and lots of ways, and we have lots of masking techniques that we won't even realize that we're doing ourselves. So rather than actually necessarily trying to find the consequences of what's going on, I would say do all the things beforehand that you need to do. So my big thing, and I've, you know, written blogs and I rant on about it all the time, is connection. So I think rather than worrying about the displays of the behaviour, concentrate on all the things you can do beforehand, and then you're already doing all the things right. So that I have such a pragmatic approach in all my training, and I think that this is probably the simplest thing. So connection makes a huge difference to us. In fact, we know this now more than ever, because the pandemic has stopped us connecting in the way that we like. And Zoom was great for a month, and then we realized we like touch. We like seeing people's expressions really close up, and it's made a huge difference on some people's lives, and, you know, and other people in smaller parts of their lives. So transition periods would be the key times that I think parents and professionals need to be aware. So transitions in the home can be waking up and going to sleep, as well as going to school and coming home from school. And obviously in school it will be either changes of environment or going into school. And for those times, I'll deal with parents first. So with parents, laughter is the simplest and cheapest and easiest, I think, form of connecting with your child. So I think of the morning as, give an example, this is real life now. It's real life. Yeah. So ready to get moving in the morning, I make an effort, even if we have no more time, to do something really, really silly before we get in the shower. Now, my reason for that is he straight away then feels more connected to me. When we're more connected to somebody, we have more cooperation. The time that it takes to spend 3-4 minutes being silly, throwing him around the bed and tickling him, because that's one of his love languages, he absolutely loves it, is really small compared to the time I save in having to cajole and remind and do for and all of those different bits and pieces. So sometimes we need to, even if we're in a rush, recognize that our time is finite, and it's better not to have a battle, it's better to have cooperation and to waste a bit of time somewhere at the start so that you don't waste lots of little times as you go along. And I can tell you from experience that very much works. All the times that I've forgotten it, I've always understood it's my fault that the things haven't happened. And I think in school, I love Mini-Me Yoga. I think it's an absolutely brilliant program. And there's so many parts of the Mini-Me Yoga program that you can do for the transitions that just get people to just stop and feel more connected to the class. And I think the Omin exercises are brilliant about sending love out to everybody. So that's the one that I always tell the teachers to do, because if you make a collective sound, the actual Omin calms the vagus nerve, and it just helps everybody feel connected. And particularly if there are worries going on, they can send out being safe to everyone. And it's just that act of doing something collaboratively that makes such a difference for transitions, I think, and for connecting and just generally feeling a part of something, which helps. So, yeah, I didn't answer your question, but I hope that...
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love this. And so we're talking about, you know, we're talking about that connection, and, you know, something that I... talked about recently was, you know, okay, so I think it was a free Mini-Me Yoga game that I did, and, you know, normally we do free hugs, don't we? Free hugs with love. So, you know, we ask somebody if they want a hug, then we have a hug, and then we've got that connection. We can't do that, but the eyes, we can connect with the eyes. And so isn't it fun when we look into somebody's eyes, even if it's just for a moment, and we give them a smile and then see if we get a smile, but even if we've got, you know, a face covering on or something. So I think everybody can do this connection. And I love the way that you explain what that does, you know, what that actually achieves. But, you know, with connection, is we can smooth things out. We can transition. Everybody feels that collective oneness. You know, I think that's so beautiful.
It's lovely. I really agree that we are going to have to adapt lots of the ways that we do things. But hopefully we'll be able to have more bubbles where we can do more touch, and it'll be, you know, some sense of normalcy, because actually we need touch, like we massively need touch, all of us. But you're completely right about, like, your eyes show so much, don't they? You know, you can make somebody feel so much better even with a little wink or something. You know, it's really good to pass it on. And even if the teacher says that they're having a game during the day and you all have to catch a wink, and it means, you know, you are safe or whatever it is that's appropriate for that setting, and it's making people feel involved and feel connected is really important, and will be massively important going back to school.
So can you tell us, obviously our passion, you know, we've got little ones, and you talked about teenagers, and it's something that I know a lot of people have been asking me, is how, so teenagers, maybe they've had exams, maybe they haven't, maybe they're preparing to go into exam situations. There's a lot of stuff going on for teenagers, isn't there, in education and such like. How can you give us some top tips in how we can, you know, best assist our teenagers, perhaps that haven't had, you know, all of the, you know, emotional coaching and all you know, the mini-me's and all the different types of things that we do when they're little. Maybe they haven't had that yet. What can we do to support them?
Well, so firstly, I'd say that it's never too late to start. Remember that it was all started from marriage counselling. So when you think of it that way, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. So if you are a parent, you think, oh, I didn't do any of that, if I let my child down. You haven't. You absolutely haven't. Start now. And it will still make them into fantastic adults. It's absolutely brilliant. You know, I've noticed a difference in me with talking to Freddie in that way. So if you are a parent listening and you have teenagers, just start. Just start naming those emotions and start keeping the communication open. Connection is massively important for teenagers. One of the reasons that they bond with their peers is because they feel massively connected. And it's at a time where biologically not, and it's normal, they're trying to steer away from their peers and to move towards their peers. But if we keep that open connection, like I do, it's quite symbiotic, because it kind of expands and it grows smaller, and there's different times when it's stretched. And if we keep that connection going, it will have a marked impact on them. You may not see it straight away, and you may think that you're butting your head against a wall, but that's just teen life. That you know, you can't expect miracles. I think that, you know, managing your expectations is really important. So naming emotions and spending time with them one-on-one, with no guilt, with no expectations, with no ramifications if they don't. It has to be genuine quality time, and a quality time doesn't have to be full-on hours. It could be 15 minutes. So if it means that you take a detour on your drive and you just go somewhere to do something that they like, or just to listen to some music that they like, it's about having those shared experiences and connecting in that way. And that will allow them to feel that they can then chat to you. There's a little proviso here. I'm going to say questions are not connections. So if you can, try not to bombard your teenager with loads of questions, because it's the first thing that gets their back up. And in fact, it's the same for younger children. For younger children, you can do things like, oh, I wonder if you enjoyed your lunch. But you can't do that with teenagers, because that's massively patronising. but you can... you can just talk to them, but don't bombard them with questions, and be open about them asking you questions as well. I think expectations and them knowing what your expectations of them is hugely important. And I mean, not in so much as that you expect them to like tidy their room and all of those things. You expect them to be comfortable enough to release their emotions at home, without there being consequences in a negative way for that. Mm. It's really key to letting your teenagers know, because actually all the slamming doors and all that is a part of it. Now, we're talking about normative behaviour. I'm not talking about the extremes of anything. You can't have destructive behaviour at home. But saying to them, you know, I know that you are going to be feeling some anxiety. You may not always know when that's going to pop up, but... you know, that's okay, and we'll work through it. And you know, it's not always a bad thing to come and tell me anything like that, or if you've done something, come and tell me. In terms of teachers, I really think that they just need to just let them know that there's no pressure. You know, we do not know how we are meant to deal with a pandemic, because none of us have lived through it. And all of the teachers that I know personally and professionally have actually been fantastic. Like they genuinely don't expect everybody to be fully functioning. In fact, come back even better than they were before, because that's not real life, is it? We are all experiencing this for the first time, and we're all experiencing it for the first time with other people experiencing it for the first time, including the teachers. So as long as they keep the lines of communication open and lay their expectations that it's just about, you know, being in charge of your own behaviours, but understanding your emotions are all fine and you're not in charge of them per se. So yeah. All are okay, but not all behaviours, I think, would be the key.
So also, you know, one thing that cropped up for me is that I know there's been a lot of children that perhaps maybe haven't got a safe home or background, but you know, they've gone through this lockdown, and they have been at home for whatever reason, and now they're coming back into school or society a lot more, you know, and they might have neighbours, they might have family friends that don't know what's going on, you know, at home, but now maybe these emotions, as you say, are becoming destructive. Maybe they're self-sabotaging, you know, all these different types of things. What is the process to help them or intervene? Is it creating a safe space, or what can we do?
I think because of my background, I would never, ever advocate somebody trying to be a social worker when they're not. So it's a fine line. I think we can use our you know, common sense and our logic. If anyone is ever genuinely worried about the safety or well-being of a child, call the NSPCC or call your local children's services. There's a threshold for all of these things, so people aren't going to have their children whipped away. But if lots of little bits of information can form a bigger picture, it's really important that the neighbour or, you know, the shopkeeper, whoever it is that locally notices stuff, is able to feel that they can ring up and say, I'm just a bit worried about this. Now, obviously, professionals will have their own route and they're not allowed to be anonymous with all of that. But your neighbour can be, so that can be done all anonymously. If you're just thinking that somebody just may need a friendly ear, just be a friendly ear. I mean, it can start with a hello. Going back to my detached youth work days, and in this world I'm quite grateful I'm not doing it right now. We used to, as part of the reconnaissance days, we used to literally walk past groups many times and just nod and say hello. So they just got used to us and just felt that we were safe. And I think there's a lot to be said for that letting people know that you're consistent and that you're open to a conversation. And it, you know, it can be a daft conversation, you know, like British do about the weather. Or it can be, you know, you could ask something a little bit more personal, but I would never advise somebody try to assess the situation wholly on their own just because of my background. I'm sure other people will give a different answer, but I think that we need to let the professionals be able to gather that information and all those little tidbits together to form a wider picture. But we can all be kind, friendly neighbours all the time, and you don't need to be worried about somebody to be that.
That's exactly what I think, because I think, you know, people, you know, we are going to see different outbursts. We are going to see different reactions to things. We are going to see a lot of different things going on. And I think people are, you know, sometimes they don't realize the power of just a hello or being kind or saying, how are you doing? How's school going? Or, you know, whatever it is. Oh, isn't this weather terrible? You know, like you said, people just don't realize that is so powerful.
It is so powerful. If you think about the NHS clap and how people really like to come in to their front doorstep and just seeing their neighbours and clapping. I mean, it just goes to show how we seek out connection, don't we? And if you can have a way of just connecting with your neighbours or anybody you're worried about in a slightly more open way, so they don't have to meet you halfway, then that's great. And just starting a conversation does exactly that. As long as you don't take it personally if they don't take you up on it.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to be prepared to put yourself out there and not get anything in return. And that's what it's about, isn't it? That's being a good and kind person, you know?
100%. And of course, it might be that what you're seeing one day is the outcome of lots of little things that have happened. You know, the death of a thousand cuts analogy, isn't it? You know, you won't necessarily get the whole picture, but then on another day you might be the thing that changed that day around for a person, which is just a wonderful thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. So we're going to kind of finish up with our interview now, because I know we're coming up to that time, but what would you say to all the parents, you know, kind of your final parting words of, you know, advice or, you know, whatever, you know, we can impart to parents and teachers going back, heading back? I know in Scotland they're already back. So what can we give to them as our parting words?
go back to connection. I think connection is the key to helping us all survive and thrive out of this. So find a way, in the simplest way possible, because it doesn't have to be complicated, to connect your classroom or your family or your relationships in any way. And then there is no negative consequence of that.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been amazing to chat to you today. We've got some real gems here. So I hope people will enjoy and, you know.
We didn't been... give your old pop in either. We did so well.
We did. And I'm going to see you soon, obviously.
Yes.
But if people want to connect with you, if they want a session, maybe they want to come and learn about the emotional coaching and all this kind of stuff, can we put in the links in the comment box, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is currently being rebuilt, so I only have a free PDF on there at the minute. But that's about connection through play, actually. So if people do, I'll pop the links in and they can actually have a free PDF all about connection. Anybody's interested in any of these sessions that I run, then messaging me through the Facebook page or my email is really, really easy, and I can set it up via Zoom.
Good. And just to let people know that they can do some of the sessions online with you, can they?
All of the things that I've done have been adapted online, even for all of the professionals that I'm doing it with. So the Foster and Network are getting me to do a big round of Zoom type calls for all of their foster carers. And we've just adapted everything. That's what I've been doing, adapted.
I know, isn't it amazing? But I'm so happy that they can still connect and reach you, though. This is the most important thing. Thank goodness that they got that. And you know, so if you want to have a session or if you want to have a consultation with Rachel, please get in touch, because as she said, it's never too late to start. And so, you know, these are ever-changing times, and even if you've got lots of tools in your tool belt, then there's always room for an extra one, I think.
And it complements everything. It's I've never seen a program that they're so aligned with all of the bits that I've preached for a long time without realizing that I was emotion coaching.
Amazing. I love it. Thank you so much. And we'll put all of those links in the comments for everybody. And lots of love to everyone, and lots of love to you, Rachel. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.